Welcome into the debut episode of what we're calling We the Pod. Sarah Spain, Tom Waddle, and Bill Barnwell talking to you about the new ESPN series, We the Fans, focusing on a handful of diehards in the Section 250 of the Chicago Bears Soldier Field, a place very familiar to Tom Waddle.
Yes.
And to me. We'll see how Bill feels about the show as an outsider, as an employee of the Cleveland Browns.
Ouch!
It might be different for him not being a Chicago native. So let's start there. I didn't know necessarily what to expect. I didn't know if this was a sports show or a reality show or a bit of both. An ode to the Bears and their fans, sort of a criticism. I didn't know what to expect. I want to get your immediate reaction first, Bill, because you are an outsider watching without as intimate knowledge of the characters and the places.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been to Chicago a bunch of times. I've never been to a game at Soldier Field before, so I don't have that experience myself. I find it really interesting. I think there's a lot of characters where, you know, I saw some reflection of my friends really more so than anything else, people who I know who go to games on a weekly basis, who are, you know, who are tailgating at 9 a.m., who are driving hours to get to the game. I lived in Boston for 14 years. I had a ton of friends who were Patriots fans who would drive, you know, hours in traffic to get to the game, and it was really the centerpiece of their weekend. It was, okay, well, I can't go out Saturday night. I can't do this or that. I have to be ready for the game on Sunday. And so, you know, I really found it echoed a lot of people I knew, you know, who weren't Bears fans necessarily. But just, you know, I wonder whether these Bears fans are different from hardcore fans of other teams.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting for me as well, because I'm coming at this project from a different perspective.
Right.
Having played for this organization, the stadium was a little bit less appealing back in my time than it is now. The renovations have been great, but
yeah, what they did in the 50s was
yeah,
big.
It was. I mean, and the fact that the fact that the guys actually wear face masks these days
it's incredible.
Is fantastic.
Right.
But in all seriousness, you know, I always felt, you know, take a step back, you know, blessed to be given the opportunity to play for the charter franchise, and you really don't know just what that entails and how meaningful it is until you kind of join the organization and you experience it. And then when you're exposed to the diehard fans that have, you know, been generational fans for this franchise, you get a little extra flavor for that. It's a diehard group. It is an eclectic group. It's a group that, you know, will ride with you through the good times and the bad, and there have been more bad than good times here in Chicago recently. But they appreciate a good, hard, honest day's work, and, you know, they see a lot of themselves in the actual players. That's why, for me, I mean, I was a blue-collar player, and I immediately developed a very good relationship with the fan base and appreciated them. So
you've been milking it for years, right?
I have. Listen, I'm 50 years old, and I got here in 89 and never left. So for the love of everything good
yeah.
and pure.
Just hang on to that Ditka connection and ride.
A mediocre 6 years in this town has turned into something I can actually, you know, take care of my wife and four kids with. So I know, but it's special. I feel that I've been blessed and honored to. I'm honored to have played for the organization and the relationship that I have had and continue to have with the fans of this franchise is something that will always be very special for me.
Bill, I think your point's a good one, though. I don't know that they're appreciably different from the diehards in other places. I think there are certainly cities and teams that have a larger percentage of diehards, the kind that are going to show up no matter what, and that probably also consider themselves more into it because of the weather and because, you know, you're not going to show up negative 12 degree December day unless it's really meaningful to you. But what I'm hearing from you, Bill, is that maybe the reason that you feel like this reminds you of friends and family is because you are not the guy that wakes up at 9 a.m. to tailgate.
No, I have to work till 5 a.m. Monday night, so I can't, you know. Maybe in a different life, if I was not a football writer,
right.
If I wasn't working super late Sunday, I think I would be to some extent. Like, you know, if I'm watching the U.S. national team, that's sort of the thing where I'm the most fanish about it. And I would not hesitate for a second to go out and, you know, start drinking at 9 a.m. and eat a ton of food. Like, that sounds great to me. But I don't have that experience personally. I have to experience that through other people.
So this is funny. This is a funny dynamic then. Because I think Waddle's in the same boat. He hasn't even gone to a Bears game in how long?
I retired in 1995 in the spring/summer of 95. I have gone to 2 Bear games since I retired.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's in basically I was there on the field for 2 different alumni events. So I have never actually
just
participated
gone to a,
in a fan-crazed endeavor.
So this is what's interesting to me about talking to you guys about it, because this is me. Not as much lately, because my schedule is terrible. Great. My schedule is great. I'm busy, and I love it. But, yeah, I do go at 9 a.m. and tailgate with a huge crew.
After getting in at 6 a.m.
I know, right? I know, right? I put it in. But, yeah, there's a group that I tailgate with. That it's a 1979 school bus that's renovated. It's got turf on the floor and Hall of Fame signatures on all the walls. There's a group of 50-plus, and they've roasted an entire cow, a huge pig. Like, everyone, it's the guy with the tattoos all over his bald head, and the girl who dresses up as the honey bear. That haven't been around since the 80s. And
my name, my signature is actually
on the bus.
It's permanently inked into the guy.
Oh,
who
the
has,
guy's head?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's his head, but a portion of his, I think in his shoulder, I'm on his shoulder.
Oh, nice.
Any bear player that he was able to kind of coerce into signing his body, I remember signing his body a decade ago with a Sharpie marker, and then basically his tattoo artist would then go over the Sharpie, and now my signature, my quote-unquote autograph, is permanently etched in this man's flesh.
Yeah, those are the people I hang out with sometimes.
Yeah, that
and
doesn't surprise
the
me.
The one guy wears a bear, actual bear that used to be his pet or something, on his head. He wears the remains of his head.
I don't think it was a pet, but yes.
No, that's the rumor.
His name,
it's
actually, or his title Bearman. Is Bearman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
So it's interesting to listen to you guys, because I feel like one thing that fans sometimes accuse media of is getting distanced from the fans and forgetting that what they're covering, what they spend all their time talking about, for some people is more that, you know, I hate when people say I use sports as an escape, because usually they're saying from women, which is problematic for me. But when people say they're using sports as an escape, for some people it really is meaningful and necessary to create a diversion from what might be a really tough life. And one of the characters in the show, Brian, drives 3 hours from Savannah, Illinois. He spends his days living with his mother, taking care of her. She has dementia. Doesn't seem like he really has the opportunity to have too much of a social life outside of going to work at the local radio station and taking care of his mom. And Wayne Drays, one of the reporters for ESPN The Mag, said he spent a day with him and called him during one of the really cold, miserable snowstorms and said, "Are you still coming up for the game? It's going to take you hours to drive up in this snow." And he said, "You know, I thought about not coming, and then I thought, if I don't go to this game, then who am I as a person?"
Wow. Yeah, I mean, all the characters felt on the show were really interesting, and I felt like they actually were, for different reasons, I would want to hang out with them. I'd want to watch a game with them. I feel like it would be a fun experience. I mean, these are all, obviously the Bears did not have great expectations heading into the season last year. I mean, it would have been totally reasonable for a fan to be skeptical and say, you know, they're not going to be that good. But, you know, everyone on the show, all the characters were so genuine and had such a genuine sort of enthusiasm for the Bears and for the beginning of the season, except for one, which we'll get to. But, you know, Brian is someone who, I think we all know people, someone like that, someone who is really dedicated to his family, someone who is very selfless, it seems like. And this is the one thing during the season that he gets. And I think when I was thinking about my perspective, you know, I'm someone who writes about football from usually an analytic perspective, and I can be a little number crunchy. I can be a little sort of,
oh, you think?
You know, bored. I said, well, you know, maybe it makes sense for this team to kind of push things back, wait a year, wait 2 years, you know, rebuild, be slow about it. But think about someone like Brian, who's putting in so much effort to go to these games. It's awful to think about a team kind of giving up on a season and not being competitive. And it's such a, you know, it's another sort of sacrifice to care about a team like the Bears. It's not the same sort of sacrifice, but it is a, you know, it's a sacrifice, but it's also a, you know, hopefully in the long term, a reward for someone like Brian.
Well, and I think from a player's perspective as well, it's a reminder that, you know, you are an integral part of these people's lives. And you should treat your job and the great opportunity you have with that in mind. And I heard Anthony Rizzo say this the other day on a local radio show here at ESPN 1000. He said, look, my opportunity to spend 30 seconds with a wild Cubs fan is 30 seconds for me, but it may leave a lifetime of an impression on that person. You realize the impact you can have on these people's lives, and you need to really, from my perspective, you need to value that. You know, somebody told me a long time ago, it takes more energy to be a jerk than it does to be a kind, gentle person, and to realize that guys like Brian, this is his escape. This is his way of kind of just walking through that door in a different dimension and leaving part of the adversity of his life behind. And I think in 2017, a lot of professional athletes, and it's happened throughout the course of the years, you don't really have the connection to the fan then maybe you should. I'm not saying you have to spend, you know, an hour a day with people, but to understand just what you get to do and your performance and your affiliation to this team means to the tens of thousands of people mm-hmm. who make all kinds of sacrifices to be in that building and share this common experience with others. For me, I mean, not to get too deep, but as a player, that's something that resonates with me, and I hope that it resonates with guys these days. You know, ultimately, we all say, well, the fans are paying your salary. I don't know that there's an actual, you know, connect the dots singularly on that. But, yeah, in large part, if they didn't come to see you and they didn't have a passion for what you're doing, you know, you certainly wouldn't be making the money that you're making. So I think it's an interesting component, and people like Brian to me are an inspiration, even as a retired player.
Let's talk about Mike and Siobhan. This couple is fascinating to me because I absolutely know people like them. I have friends. They actually live in San Diego now. But this guy played in roughly six different sport and social adult sports leagues per week. So at least 5 days a week, one day he doubled up. He would be gone for a couple hours playing flag football, softball, whatever. And his wife was not interested at all. And to me, that was always odd that if you have free time, that you would spend all of it separately. But I know so many people like that. It would be weird for me to be the Siobhan or the Mike in that relationship and to just not care at all about something that someone else is so invested in, or vice versa. But I don't know if you guys have relationships like that in your life.
Oh, sure. I mean, I've dated people who haven't liked sports before. You know, I have friends who don't like sports. A big group of my friend circle just has no interest in sports whatsoever, or very limited interest in sports, where they like one team or one sport, and 90% of the year don't care about anything else. And I think that's totally fine. I think it's valid to have that. You know, to have someone who doesn't like sports, you can do that, but it seems like Mike is really into sports, and this is his primary interest in so many different ways. And whether it's the editing of the show, we'll see what happens with Siobhan. I wanted to figure out, you know, what they do like about one another and what they do engage with and interact with, because it seems like Mike is maybe dragging Siobhan on to stuff that she doesn't want to go to a good amount of the time, or that you know, Siobhan is willing to tolerate it just because she likes Mike that much. And it's great to see them happy, but I just wonder, you know, what do they connect on? What does Mike find interesting that is not sports necessarily that Siobhan enjoys?
Something tells me they may need a relationship therapist at some point before this project is over.
Well, that'll be us at the reunion. Yeah. We're going to have a reunion show, getting the whole cast back together. We're going to Andy Cohen the out of that, and we're gonna bring them together and ask them all these questions. I think we'll save some of that for the wedding episode, because I feel like the fireworks are really going to – we've seen the previews where people are watching Cubs Game 6 of the NLCS on their phones during the wedding. Yeah. And as someone who is very recently married, I think we'll have some insight on that.
I was married so long ago, there was no such thing as a cell phone, much less watching anything on a cell phone. So,
also, they have a very, very, very cute dog. And I'm paying attention to this dog in episodes. I'm hoping the dog gets more screen time.
He looks like a very good dog, yes.
You know what else I think is interesting about this is the relationship. You have people coming from different backgrounds, different social backgrounds, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different regional areas. And just to see how they all meld together in Section 250 and the relationships that build, I think that's a really cool portion. And to me, that was the biggest take, not knowing exactly. Look, we had people in our studio throughout the season this year kind of getting the fan reaction from what was a very trying season from the Bears. No idea really what this project was going to be. And my first impression from seeing, you know, the first two episodes was, wow, this is really cool to see this section of the stadium somehow, some way is, you know, there's a common thread there with all of these people who develop these relationships. And I'm kind of interested to see where some of these relationships go.
Well, and even in the one family, the Townsells, it is a coming together, even just on a micro level for them, because they have decided, you know, that family members who passed away after that happened, it might not allow them to spend as much time together. So they forcibly have these family reunions once a month, and they really make the effort to see each other. And then they get together for Bears games. And I love the one girl who just consistently gets heckled for not having any Bears gear and doesn't care. Like, at some point you think you just say, okay, I just don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm just going to throw on a sweatshirt because who cares? But she's just hardcore going to continue to annoy everybody else around her by being neutral for, we'll see how long. But yeah. Did anyone
else...
Her
quote? She said she wanted to come comfortable but stylish.
Yes.
So that could be an issue.
Well, I like the part that there was this tease in there where they're like, she's on TV for another reason, but we'll get to that later. I'm like, what is it?
Well, that's, yeah.
She, I mean,
you're
in, vixen?
You're,
is
you're
she
in the business.
Yeah.
You know what a tease is.
Right. They killed that one. I'm excited. I want to, because it sounded mysterious. It didn't just sound like, you know, she has a cooking show. It sounded like something, you know, salacious.
Listen, I'm not telling anybody something they don't know. This Bears season sucked. They were 3-13. I'm interested to see how everybody handles the adversity of watching their, listen, they're all there to have a good time and interact because they're friendly and there are relationships there. But at the end of the day, they're spending 3.5 hours each Sunday that there is a home game to watch their favorite football team compete. And the results were not what anyone wanted this year. So I'm also interested to see how everybody handles the adversity that was the 2016 season.
And, Bill, you think probably as far as choosing a topic, choosing a team that was likely to be terrible was likely intentional and probably for the best, because watching people happily celebrate another winning season probably isn't as dramatic.
Yeah, I mean, it's no fun, especially if you're a fan of a team that isn't playing very well, to watch, like, you know, just to pick on Patriots fans, because I've lived in Boston for so long, like, watch Patriots fans celebrate Tom Brady being great. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't need this in my life. I have enough of this on a day-to-day basis from other people I know who are Patriots fans. Like, I think it's easier to identify with a team that's struggling, I think, than a team that's doing well. I think most teams aren't, you know, hitting their goals. They're not winning the Super Bowl. They're not making it deep in the playoffs. Most teams are disappointing on a year-to-year basis. So I think it's easier if you're a fan of another team to identify with that and kind of feel that element of, oh, I'm going through this for another year, but I still love this team. I think it's you know, you want to identify with that a little more.
I would think also you either, when you embark on this project, you either want a team that's really good or really bad. 8-8 is not going to provide the storylines that you're looking to get. Exactly. So, and also to hear that the Bears were so willing and open with the just kind of the access they gave all the folks involved with this project was a little bit surprising to me, because having played for the organization and had a relationship with this organization for a couple of decades now, they play everything very close to the vest. And they are a team that I believe even this year is a candidate for Hard Knocks.
They almost always are.
Yes, because of the criteria.
Right.
And they have said openly, ownership, George McCaskey, who is now the acting, you know, family member who's in charge, we don't want any part of that.
It's interesting, though, because Brandon Faber, who was at the Blackhawks, is now at the Bears. And we saw how the Blackhawks managed to completely turn around their approach to the fan base and marketing their players and marketing storylines. And I ran into him at the We the Fans premiere and sort of chatted about how when the Bears are as bad as they have been the last couple years, you got to find a way to connect people to players and people to storylines and keep them interested.
Well, and this was their initiative to start the year. I mean, this project obviously started prior to kickoff of the 2016 season. So, I mean, they had not reached the level of despair yet.
I mean,
3-13 is the worst 16-game regular season this organization, this franchise has ever experienced.
And now it's memorialized forever, and We the Fans.
Absolutely. That's why I'm saying I want to see if this group of fans takes the season as hard as some of the fans that I know took this season and demanding, you know, different changes inside the organization. It'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds.
Okay, before we go, though, we have to mention the diamond in the rough of this whole thing, the find that is the beer man.
Yeah.
I just watched a couple different documentaries. I'm not throwing anyone under the bus, but this guy is a beer man who's the narrator, and he's a million times better voiceover than people that are professionally hired to do this. Like, what do you make of them using him as sort of the connective tissue?
Well, I thought it was great. I hope as the episodes roll on that we see him play a different role, not just his voice, but see how he interacts, because I think he is the common thread amongst all of the people that are coming from different environments is he's a guy that's there every Sunday or every Monday night with them. So that was a really unique decision to use him. And you're right. I mean, the first two episodes, he knocked it out of the park. I'd like to see him play a bigger role going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very jealous of people who are good at multiple things. I feel like I'm good at one thing, and that's my job, and that's, I'm not good at that, but that's it. This dude is probably a pretty good beer guy,
yeah.
And he's a really good narrator. So I kind of feel like I want to see what else he can do. Like, can he do quantum physics? Can he, like, I feel like there's a lot of possibilities for, what's his name? Is it Terry? Terry's the beer man.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we get more of him, or if it's just that they found a great-voiced guy who has a loose connection and then can create a bridge between all the pieces of footage they have that have no natural connection. That'll be interesting to see which one it is. And also, we almost didn't mention the vignettes. Bill, as someone who doesn't personally know Billy Deck, Mongo, and Ditka, what did you make of the sort of Godfather-esque tributes vignettes that each guy got?
I love Ditka and Mongo. That's exactly what I wanted them to be. I mean, Billy D, I would say more ex-Barry's players in those vignettes, and maybe fewer
right.
entrepreneurs.
I think they needed to find an interesting way to explain PSLs, and the best thing they could do is create an analogy to a club. But
yeah,
I agree. The Mongo and Ditka felt very on brand with the cigars and the glasses of whiskey. And
can't get away from it. It's what it will always be.
It will be Ditka. Until,
synonymous until the end of time.
Right, exactly. Well, Bill, you were already critical of at least the Townsells for bailing early on and going to Florida on a family vacation. You were like, are these real super fans? They're not even at the game. You even criticized the woman that was in the hospital for not showing up. So I'm starting to wonder what your criteria. Do you have to get wheeled into a stadium to meet the Bill Barnwell seal of approval? Is that how they do things with the Cleveland Browns?
About how dedicated you guys are as fans. I don't think I said that about Susie.
Was either Sue or Sylvia? Yeah.
If you're sick, don't go. It's fine. I'm not going to say if you're sick, you should go to games. But I just found it interesting. You're doing a show about these super hardcore dedicated fans, and in week two, it's like, oh, actually, we're in Orlando. Sorry. You want to go to Orlando? Go to Orlando. I also don't understand why Siobhan and Mike are getting married in the fall. Like, why not get married in the spring or the summer?
Aren't
going on.
Trust me, as someone who just got married and looked at a calendar and was like, all right, the very worst thing that could happen is a very early round Blackhawks victory that we'd be competing with, and that's about it. Like, and for our honeymoon, we can't leave until at least this date of November in case the World Series.
Like, y'all are crazy to actually have
the calendar.
I mean, to have your marital schedule dictated by local sports events.
But imagine if we hadn't. Imagine if we'd been taking off for our honeymoon right before Game 7 of the World Series.
Right.
That's terrible. We would have been miserable.
Well, you can't. I mean, you can't. Can you manage your life around what the Cubs' potential postseason schedule would be?
I am. Eddie Vedder already did it. Eddie Vedder said, "Like, Pearl Jam's not touring in the fall for the next however many 5-6 years. I think this team's got dynastic possibilities." So Eddie can do it. We can all do it, Tom.
Okay.
But you're right, Bill. It's interesting that if this is such a huge part of Mike's identity, that they would be like, yeah, that seems like a good time. Although it sounds like they might have scheduled around the Bears and forgot that the Cubs have the potential to play in October.
Yeah, that's on them. You know what? Everyone had high hopes for the Cubs. They should know better. I'm going to blame them for that. Well, we'll see. Maybe they'll explain it. Maybe they'll have a reason for it. Maybe there's some plausible explanation, but it just seems very strange to me. But you know what? I mean, like, you can skip games. I don't care. The only person I want to talk about, the only other person I think I want to get to, is Mark, who is Mike's Siobhan replacement for games.
Yeah.
I'm really into Mark. I feel like Mark is my favorite character
Spicoli.
On the show.
Spicoli, who at the beginning I thought for sure was like maybe doing drug deals in the tailgating lots, and then at the end they're like, oh, by the way, he was like in the Marines and he has a six pack and
he
like
just decided
what?
To grow his hair
end?
Out.
What about the end? Were you talking about episode one here or episode one and two?
We're talking about both, one and two.
Okay, so at the end of episode two, when the Bears are winning, they're handing out cough syrup after touchdowns.
Yes. I completely forgot about that. Yeah. They're just like pounding purple drink after a score or whatever. And I'm like, wow, so section 250 is just lit all the time?
Yeah, it's going down, 250.
Isn't that illegal, too? Like, are we just, isn't that illegal? Is that contraband?
I don't think it is legal, but whatever.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to say you can't
ask DeMarcus Russell. I think he knows.
Yeah, I don't know what's legal or what isn't legal, but I'm getting the feeling that everything's legal in Section 250. Yeah.
I completely forgot about that. Was that him passing it around? Because that's the least surprising. Was it Mark?
I don't remember who was passing it around, but it was being shared.
No, you're right. Mark is an interesting character because I did kind of decide who he was based on his haircut and his just kind of like, bruh. And then at the end, they just slip in this photo of him with, like, a 24-pack looking like...
Don't you feel ashamed that you jumped to that conclusion without really knowing who
Mark
was?
No, I know I'm very judgmental.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure our
old enough to know myself.
Our podcast audience knew that about you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Bill is a hater. I'm judgmental, and we haven't figured out your brand yet, Tom.
Well, you're going to have to wait around. It's a tease.
Speaking of teases, you're going to have to wait around for the next episode of We the Pod. We'll be back next week to wrap up the next couple episodes. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with all of these characters and seeing if Bill continues to hate on the ones who get sick. And...
Well, there won't be a whole lot of purple drink sharing because there weren't very many wins
victories.
This
they
year.
Might have to just start do it on first downs.
Yes.
Some scissor for every first down. Sarah Spain, Tom Waddle, and Bill Barnwell, thanks so much for tuning in, guys.